Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. Today on the program, we report on recent warnings by China about what it calls provocative behavior in the South China Sea. The warnings follow news reports that the American military is planning to sail warships close to artificial islands China has been building up in the disputed waters of the sea. And we will try to answer the question, are glass skywalks safe? In central China, people fled from a structure recently when cracks appeared. Then, as we always do on Tuesday, we will bring you the Environment and Science Report. This week, we look at the new movie, The Martian. We will hear what movie critics and astronauts have to say about some of the information presented in the popular movie. And as we do every weekday, we will present The Making of a Nation with Steve Ember. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English because we exist to help you learn everyday American English. We speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. China has warned against what it has called provocative behavior in the South China Sea. As Mario Ritter tells us, the warning followed news reports earlier this month.
The report said the United States military is planning to sail warships close to artificial islands China has been building up in the disputed waters. The reports say U.S. officials have said they are considering sailing warships within about 22 kilometers, or within a 12 nautical mile zone, of the artificial islands within the next 2 weeks. China claims these areas as extensions of its territory. However, neither the U.S. Defense Department nor the administration of President Barack Obama have confirmed the reports. Last month, U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter spoke about the situation in the South China Sea. He said the United States would fly, sail, and operate wherever international law allows, as U.S. forces do all over the world. The United States does not recognize some of China's territorial claims in the South China Sea. the Philippines, Vietnam, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Brunei all have conflicting claims to several areas and island groups in the sea. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying was asked by reporters about possible U.S. patrols in the South China Sea on Friday. She said China, in her words, will never allow any country to violate China's territorial waters and airspace in the Spratly Islands in the name of protecting freedom of navigation and overflight. The United States has said it will not intervene in the ongoing territorial disputes, but it has said it will protect freedom of navigation in a region that is critical for international shipping. I'm Mario Ritter.
Are those glass skywalks safe? Ana Mateo has been looking into that.
Imagine this. You are visiting a beautiful mountain somewhere in the countryside. Part of the trip takes you up a steep mountain cliff. At the top, visitors can step out onto a see-through walkway. The reinforced glass flooring hangs about 1,000 meters above sea level. Sounds exciting, right? But then part of the flooring cracks. There is a loud noise, and some of the glass appears to break up. That is what tourists experienced recently during a visit to Yuntai Mountain in China's Henan province. The glass skywalk had only been open for a few weeks. The Yuntai Mountain Geological Park said there was no reason for worry and that the cracks had no impact on safety. But online discussions about this incident show some people were of a different opinion. Glass skywalks have become popular in many of China's tourist areas. But critics say China has an issue with poor workmanship and poor crowd control. People joked online that the setting up of these glass walkways and skyways are not transparent. Others are saying that this is nothing to laugh about. One comment on the social media site Weibo said, "This is no joke. Tourism is taking your life in your own hands. No more of these glass walkways. Just too scary." The New York Times reported that a story about the glass cracking appeared on the social media site Weibo. A tourist claimed that a piece of glass broke and people began shouting, "It's really broken, really broken." This person then said people began running and pushing people in front of them. I'm Ana Mateo.
Yuntai Mountain officials, by the way, said the cracks were not serious. But they decided that to make sure people feel 100% safe, they would close the walkway temporarily to make repairs. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Environment and Science Report with Katie Weaver and The Making of a Nation with Steve Ember are coming up next. We'd like to hear from you. Our email address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. And please know that we read every message you send us. We really do. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and
podcast edition of As It Is from The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. The Hollywood film The Martian opens to U.S. audiences on October 2nd. Actor Matt Damon stars as an astronaut left alone on Mars. His crew returned to Earth thinking he had died in a windstorm. Damon's character, Mark Watney, must survive with few supplies and somehow get a message to Earth that he is alive. The plan to release the movie was some lucky timing. The U.S. space agency NASA announced it had found strong evidence of liquid water on Mars. That again raised the possibility that, with liquid water, there could be life. NASA also took part in the development of The Martian. Director Ridley Scott and Matt Damon reached out to agency officials for help to make the story as scientific as possible. In August, Damon compared space exploration with the movie. He told Reuters news agency, "With the right funding and the right attention, these are the kinds of things that we will be exploring in the very near future. And this is going to be part of our kids' lives." So, how scientifically accurate is The Martian? Jeffrey Luger of Time magazine tried to answer that question. He pointed out two of the biggest falsehoods of the film. The first, Mr. Luger writes, is central to the story. A powerful, dangerous windstorm that forces the space crew to leave the planet. The very low-density atmosphere of Mars, Mr. Luger argues, could not create a storm like that. Mr. Luger also has trouble with the lack of danger from radiation on Mars. He notes that the 6-month trip to Mars alone would expose the astronaut to 15 times more radiation than is permitted for nuclear energy workers in a year. The magazine Popular Science also explored the movie's divide between science and science fiction. It noted the same windstorm and radiation problems as Time magazine. But Popular Science also reported much realism in the details. Science writer Sarah Fecht points to astronaut Watney's struggle to work in astronaut clothing, especially the gloves. And an expert she spoke with said the stiff gloves are a real problem. They are very difficult to bend. Popular Science also interviewed former astronaut Mike Massimino, who said he found the acting realistic. He said astronauts grow very close through flight training and survival school. He said the movie shows the close relationships that are formed. "We take care of each other as best we can," he told the magazine. "When someone needs someone, there's nothing we wouldn't do." I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's the VOA Learning English Environment and Science Report.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the 1820s, in the state of New York, a man named Joseph Smith started the Mormon religion. Smith based it on what he said were God's words to the ancient people of America. Many people became members of the new church. Others, however, laughed at some of the beliefs of the Mormons. This led to trouble. Smith had to move his people many times. For a while, they settled in the state of Illinois, in a town they built and called Nauvoo. The church split when Joseph Smith said that Mormons could have more than one wife. The split led to violence and public opposition to the Mormons. Smith was arrested and put in jail. A mob attacked the jail and killed Smith and his brother. The governor of Illinois ordered the Mormons to leave the state. This week on our series, Sarah Long and Richard Rail discuss relations between the Mormons and the federal government.
Brigham Young became the new leader of the Mormons. He told his people that he had seen their new home in a dream. He said it was a wide, beautiful valley in the west. He said he would recognize it when he saw it. The Mormons left Illinois in the spring of 1846. There were more than 15,000 people and many wagons and farm animals. The trip west was hard. Many of the people died. After months of slow travel, they stopped to make their winter camp.
Explorers visited the camp. They told Brigham Young about a great salt lake in a wide valley on the western side of the Rocky Mountains. From the way they described it, Young believed it was the valley of his dream. He started to move his people toward the Great Salt Lake as soon as the winter snows melted. They arrived in the summer of 1847. Brigham Young looked out over the valley. "This," he said, "is the right place."
The Mormons wasted no time. 2 hours after arriving, they began to prepare the ground for planting. The lake water was too salty to use, so they built a system of canals to bring water down from the mountains. The first few years were difficult. Cold weather and insects destroyed their crops. Yet the Mormons continued to work hard to make their settlement a success. They refused to think of leaving.
At first, the Mormons were ruled only by the laws of their church and by their leader. Then gold was discovered in California. Many non-Mormons passed through the Salt Lake area on their way to the gold fields. Some of them stayed. It soon became clear that new laws were needed to govern the growing population. The Mormons asked Congress to approve a territorial government for their land. They called the land Deseret. That was a Mormon word meaning honeybee. The Mormons claimed a large area. It stretched from the mountains of Colorado west to the mountains of California, from Arizona north to Oregon.
Congress rejected the large claim of Deseret and made it a much smaller territory. It also refused to accept the name Deseret. Instead, Congress called it Utah, after the Ute tribe of Native American Indians that lived there. As a compromise, Brigham Young was named governor of the new Utah Territory. Most of the new territorial officials were Mormons, too. Four were not Mormon.
Governing the territory would not be easy. There were disputes during the administrations of several American presidents. As a result of one dispute, the four non-Mormon officials returned to Washington. The Mormons then formed their own territorial government with a legislature and courts. Other federal officials were sent to Utah. Some of them were not prepared for the job. Usually, they did not stay long.
Some of the officials made many charges against Brigham Young and other Mormon leaders. They said Mormons refused to recognize the power of the federal government. They said Mormons put the words of Young above the laws of Congress. They said the church had a secret organization to take the lives and property of those who questioned the power of the church. There were charges that Mormons had burned the papers of the Supreme Court of the territory, and there were charges that Mormons were responsible for Indian attacks on some officials. President Franklin Pierce decided he should make someone else governor of Utah. The man he chose, however, did not want the job. Instead, he urged the president to let Brigham Young remain. President Pierce agreed.
Relations between the Mormons and the government did not improve in the next 3 years. Territorial officials resigned. They charged that the Mormons were in open rebellion against the federal government. The next president, James Buchanan, dismissed Brigham Young as governor. He ordered more than 1,000 soldiers to go to Utah to put down the rebellion. He also sent a new governor, Alfred Cumming, with the soldiers. The Mormons prepared to fight. A small group of Mormon men attacked and destroyed the army's supply wagons. They forced the soldiers to stop for the winter before reaching the Salt Lake Valley. The soldiers could do nothing until spring.
In Washington, efforts were made to settle the dispute. A man named Thomas Kane asked President Buchanan to let him go to Utah. Kane was an old friend of the president. He also was a friend of the Mormons. He had spent much time with them during their long trip to Utah 10 years earlier. Kane feared what might happen to his Mormon friends if fighting started. He told President Buchanan that he did not want a job or money. He only wanted a chance to be useful. The president agreed to let him try to settle the dispute.
Thomas Kane arrived in Salt Lake City, the territorial capital, early in 1858. He found that the Mormons had decided not to fight. Instead, they were preparing to search for a new home. They talked of moving to Mexico, or perhaps to an island in the South Pacific. Kane talked with Brigham Young. Then he went to the army camp to talk with Governor Cumming. the governor agreed to go to Salt Lake City with Kane. The two men went alone, without any soldiers.
The Mormons welcomed Cumming, but continued their preparations to leave. Cumming called a public meeting. He said he was in Utah to represent the federal government. He said he was there to make sure the people of the territory obeyed the Constitution and the laws of the United States. He said he would not use military force until every other way had failed. Above all, said Cumming, he would not interfere with the Mormon religion. He urged the Mormons not to leave the land they had worked so hard to build. Brigham Young agreed to stay.
Governor Cumming returned to the army camp. He told the commander that the Mormons had accepted him. He said military force would not be needed. A few days later, two representatives of President Buchanan arrived. They brought news that the president would not act against Mormons who accepted the rule of the United States government. Brigham Young and the other Mormon leaders made a statement. They said they wished to live in peace under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. The dispute was over. Brigham Young continued to lead the Mormon Church, but the governor ruled the territorial government. The two jobs were separate and would remain that way.
Congressional elections were held in the United States in 1858. One political race created national interest. It was for one of the two Senate seats representing the state of Illinois. The candidate of the Democratic Party was Stephen Douglas. He was running for re-election. His opponent was a lawyer and a member of the Republican Party. His name was Abraham Lincoln. That will be our story next time.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Sarah Long and Richard Rail. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.